Jope and the Bulldog.
I don't think Michael's ever done drugs.
It's Mike Jope.
I don't know if anyone's ever offered him any.
Let's go over some of the symptoms of marijuana use, shall we? You tell me who this sounds like.
It's the Bulldog.
Slow moving. Inattentive. Dull. Constantly snacking. Shows a lack of motivation.
It's Mike Jope and the Bulldog on WGR Sports Radio 550.
You know, when you do enough radio, you don't remember what things you've talked about just to people and what things you've talked about on the air. I read an article on Monday that was Bill Barnwell from ESPN with five teams he expects to improve this year in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And it was I probably didn't talk about it because it was kind of like, no kidding, on most of them. Like the Ravens. Yeah, they're a perennial contender, and they didn't do much last year.
Right.
The Lions. I still think of them as one of the top teams in the NFC. Didn't do anything. The Chiefs. Yeah, it was a down year for the Chiefs. You would expect them to bounce back. He's got the Giants and the Jets on here, which are a little more interesting. Sure. But I don't think I actually talked about this article.
Okay.
Today, he came out with the counter to that, which is five teams that I expect to regress in 2026. And it made me think about doing the reverse AFC power rankings with Mike Jope because I was very uncomfortable with some of the things we decided, but you just run out of teams to put there.
That's how it works.
So I don't – like, is that it's hanging. All right, so I'm going to reverse the reverse rankings because here's how it wound up. When Mike and I and Zach put this together, we had the Bills first, and then we have Denver, who I don't believe in.
That's old, I think.
Then we have – no, it's not. This is –
Oh, yeah, sorry. I messed you up. I'm reading it top to bottom, and I thought it was in the wrong order.
No.
Go ahead.
No, this is real. So we had the Bills first. We landed on the Bills being first.
Of course.
But all they had to do to get to first was when we got to the top three, they had to beat out Denver and Jacksonville, who I don't believe in. And then you've got Houston, who, okay, scary defense, but C.J. Stroud.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're at the Bengals, and then we're at the Patriots, and then we're at the Chargers, and then we're at the Ravens, and then we're at the Chiefs, and then we're at Indy, which is 10, and let's disregard everything after that.
Hmm.
I didn't feel comfortable when we got to three and there were three left. I was like, well, it's going to have to be Buffalo at the top because I'm not putting Denver at the top and I'm not putting Jacksonville at the top. Okay. Bill Barnwell with five teams he expects to regress. Denver, Jacksonville, New England are the three in the AFC. And I strongly believe all of those things. Now, everybody can't lose every game. I understand that I have a fixation on the Bills, and you know, there's a homer aspect to it, but it's also an analytical aspect where I'm just watching going, who is better than that team? And I understand it's a new head coach and a new coordinator on the defensive side of the ball, all that stuff, but I'm trying to figure out who to be afraid of in this conference. Let's start with New England. I did a whole thing on the Patriots the other day because there was an article written by a guy from New England talking about what it's like for the Patriots now that they're the hunted.
Mm.
Like, you're not the hunted. You're not the hunted.
I mean, technically, you want to get real.
Well, that's
real.
What I mean. You need to remind me that you were in the Super Bowl.
Right.
I know that there is a certain aspect of this where it's just I have blinders on and I'm ignoring what the Patriots did. But there are so many reasons to believe that what they did last year, I'm not going to say was fraudulent, but was heavily exaggerated based on schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at the playoffs, like, all right, prove it. Did they prove that they're the best team in the AFC in the postseason? Because technically, yeah, they were the last one standing. But at any point in there, were you thinking, oh, man, now you've got the Patriots to deal with again? I was annoyed that Drake May was playing in a Super Bowl before Josh Allen does. That bothered me. But it didn't seem repeatable in any way. The Bills won five consecutive divisions. The Patriots got one. And now it's time for the Bills to start doing it again. And I even think back to the Patriots' ridiculous run. They had a stretch where they won five. And then, oh, no, the Dolphins are here. And then the Dolphins went away. And then the Patriots won eight more or whatever it was.
Right.
So, like, that's how I view New England. Denver, I view as a team with an aggressive defense up front that can cause some problems. Kind of the same way I view Houston.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not signing up for, oh, no, watch out for Bo Nix and the Broncos at this point. Jacksonville, I just never have believed in
Trevor Lawrence.
Trevor Lawrence, yeah. So.
Okay. I I am with you on, I think, all of this pretty much, but I think maybe not as deep down the path. I think.
Well, I'm a psycho.
Well, sure. I mean, aren't we all in some weird small way? I would say for Jacksonville, I think that Liam Cohen is a witch doctor. I think he is very good, and I think that Lawrence, even with his flaws, which are there, I mean, he's not very accurate all the time, and he can have some weird decision-making issues and whatever.
And wears capri pants.
Sure, and his hair looks like that, and, you know,
his face looks like that.
A lot of stuff. But I think he is undeniably talented enough that when you put him with a coach like Cohen with some of the really solid weapons that they have, I can get you that team being consistently good to great. Denver, I think that defense is legit. And I think that they added Jaylen Waddle. And that's great. But I have a thing with Waddle where I'm never going to trust him to stay healthy for long enough to be a real game changer for them. And Bo Nix, I got some Bo Nix issues too. And that to me, I think Denver might be the team I would be most prepared to deal with again right now, even above New England, who I will get to in a moment, just because I think Peyton is the proven witch doctor version of Cohen to me. And it, like, that guy knows what he's doing.
Let me pause you for a second. You said you are prepared to deal with again. You mean you don't have a ton of fear of that team, or do you mean
prepared? I have.
You're ready for them to be.
I think they're going to be the best of the three.
Okay.
It, to me. And that may just be some residual, they beat you in the playoffs last year. Blah.
No, that's where I have them ranked. I have Denver ahead of both Jacksonville and New England in my head.
I think their defense is a bigger problem than either of the other two teams. And New England, I hear you. Like, everybody out there that's like, they're going to be great again. I hear you. And I think May will be good. I need to figure out how I feel about Drake May. I've got a Drake May problem where everybody that I really respect is telling me, like, he's Josh Allen almost. And there's something about that, about him being on the Patriots and about people describing him that way, that makes me just like, nah, I need you to get away. I'm not ready to be there with Drake May yet. And so.
Who's more Josh Allen to you, Drake May or Jackson Dart?
Oh, May.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
When I think about baby Josh, I think about
Baby Josh. Maybe baby Josh is more Dart.
I mean, he keeps getting annihilated, and that's probably not good for his future.
For sure not.
But when I first laid eyes on him before he started getting broken, I thought, I see a lot of things that I like here. And I will say the same about May. I feel like Drake May is a quarterback you're going to have to contend with for years to come, but he's nowhere near the top tier yet. I hate that he finished second for MVP last year. I was driving today, and I heard somebody saying that if I had a vote, I would have voted for him. I just wanted to drive off the road. It didn't make – don't you have to be one of the better players at the position to win? There's just something – that part of it, but independent of what everybody says about him, I like watching him play.
Same. And that's where I'm at, where I appreciate that the player has impressed me, but the noise, I think, is making me want to reject him. And so that may be a blind spot in my Patriots analysis here, but to me, the Patriots did not do as much with the money they had going into the summer as I thought they might. They obviously, they added Brown, they added Dobbs. That's big. That changes their offense. But their offense was pretty good last year with Drake May back there throwing to Kayshon Booty and a bunch of other guys you don't really remember. And so how much better will that get with those improvements at receiver? It will get better. I think I expected them to do more on the defensive side, and they didn't. And to me, if you're going to be in this division and ready to try to continue beating the Bills out for that top spot in the AFC East, you need to have a better defense than they have. I know Christian Gonzalez is great. I know they've got a couple linemen that can really play, but I don't view them anywhere near a Houston or a Denver or any of those teams that have defenses that I would fear shut Josh Allen down. I am right now Going into this season, I have zero concern about Josh Allen scoring against the Patriots.
Right.
And because of that, I have no worries about them beating the Patriots. So that's, you know, my long-winded way of explaining why I think Denver is probably the scariest.
Okay, that's fair. But the reality is, I just felt hesitant about attaching any sort of preseason hype to any of these teams. And when we were doing those rankings, I couldn't get there with any of these teams. And I want to stress again, a lot of this has to do with reading this stupid article about how it's not that the Patriots are back. It didn't really do that, but it over exaggerated all of the things that went right for that team. And I still don't think they were ever impressive in doing it. Now, in my defense, as a counter argument to what I'm saying, I didn't believe in the Patriots for the first few years of their dynasty that kicked in 01.
That's got to be comforting.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's that. But the reality is the Patriots won five divisions in a row from 03 through 07. Then the Dolphins showed up in 08 and went 11-5 and won the division. And then the Patriots won 11 more in a row. You can have a blip on the radar and still be a dynasty. Now, you're not going to call the Bills a dynasty because they haven't won a Super Bowl. They haven't been to a Super Bowl. But to be among the elite teams in the league, I don't think they're in a good enough division for it to get in the way of them making the playoffs. They will win the AFC East again. We talked about this the other day. I don't see a world in which it doesn't go Bills, Patriots, Jets, Dolphins. That's the finishing order for this division, I think.
I think I agree with that.
I don't know how else to do it.
I think the Jets have enough weapons on the offense that if Geno Smith is even passable, that they will be better than the Dolphins.
And that's exactly who he is. That's exactly who he is. He's a passable quarterback.
Exactly.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
The Dolphins are going to be an absolute disaster. It doesn't even seem like they're trying to win.
I read today that Malik Willis had to take them into a huddle mid-drive in practice to have a chat with the offense because it was going so poorly, and then they proceeded to get worse.
Yeah, that's fourth place. That's
right.
I think that's what fourth place looks like.
That's going to be tough
in late August as you're getting set for the regular season.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what I take out of this article other than validation that the thoughts that I have, because Bill Barnwell is very analytical, breaks everything down. He's very, very good at what he does. And the thoughts that just were in my head are the things that he's saying. Which team is the most, I guess the Patriots are the most interesting to talk about here. So I'm going to scroll down to what he had to say about them and why he thinks they are a candidate to be, less than they were last year. They went 14-3. They were 7-3 in games decided by 7 points or fewer. Their projected strength of schedule is 10th easiest, which is not great for the point I'm trying to make here, but it ain't
bad.
Historically awful like it was last year.
Right.
So it says, have you heard about the Patriots 2025 schedule? Pats fans might be sick of discussing the topic, and it became ubiquitous as the team made an unexpected run to the Super Bowl. I still feel like I didn't see them make a run to the Super Bowl. I watched all the games, and it still doesn't feel like it happened.
You watched them beat Denver without Bo Nix.
Right.
You probably didn't feel like they actually made the Super Bowl.
If I had more respect for Bo Nix, that would be a bigger thing. While the 2025 Patriots earned their way to compete for a Lombardi Trophy, the 2026 team is going to face a much tougher slate of opponents, and that's going to make life much more difficult for Vrabel's team. Let's put the schedule in context and look at what it means for the future. There are lots of ways to estimate schedule strength. And this is Bill Barnwell of ESPN, I like to take each of a team's opponents and look at their Pythagorean expectations. See,
woo,
he's doing more stuff than I am. I just have feelings. This guy does research, and Pythagoras is Pythagoras is involved. I like to look at their Pythagorean expectation. I would like that word to be Pythagorean, but it's not. After removing the games played against that particular team. In other words, to measure the strength of the Pats' schedule from last season, we would take their week one opponent, the Raiders, and find Vegas' points scored and allowed in every game besides the one against the Patriots, then convert that into a winning percentage. The average Patriots opponent, using this calculation, had a 414 winning percentage. Unsurprisingly, that was the easiest schedule in the NFL. Next easiest belonged to the Cowboys, and they were as close to the 12th easiest as they were to the Pats. So, I mean, it's far, far easiest, like by a lot, historical. Right. In fact, this was the easiest schedule any team has had in any season by this metric since 2010. Now we look at the 30 easiest schedules for teams by this measure since 1990, and look what happened the following year. Strength of schedule increased from 431 to 486. Those teams won an average of 9.3 games, adjusted for 17-game schedule, during their season with the fatefully easy schedule. The following year, that dropped to 8. So they drop a win and a half right there. One obvious comp is the Rams in 99, who went from 4-12 to 13-3, despite losing Trent Green. You wouldn't remember this because you were still dead.
Yeah,
but right. Dick Vermeil was their head coach, and when Trent Green got hurt, he cried. Cried right on TV. I mean, he's kind of a crier. Old guy, sensitive, you know?
Right.
But then Kurt Warner came in and things were fine for them. They wildly exceeded every possible expectation at quarterback, and the Rams team had added guys like Marshall Faulk to the mix. But they also faced a really easy schedule. They faced one team all regular season with a winning record, the 13-3 Titans, whom they would then beat in the Super Bowl. The following year, those same Rams went 10-6, finished second in the West. The defense looks like an obvious point of concern for the Pats, though the Pats were fourth in scoring defense a year ago. There's a lot of air in that ranking. A slow pace and an effective offense meant the Pats faced just over 10 possessions per game, sixth fewest in the NFL. Those teams were generally forced to throw with middling quarterbacks by virtue of trailing. Seven of the 14 quarterbacks the Patriots beat in 2025 are not expected to start in the 2026 season. So we talk about the schedule, but these are some like real points.
Right. This is
seven of your wins came against. This is like the thing about the Bills and their defense and guys that are just not in the league. These seven of their wins came, half of their wins came against quarterbacks who aren't going to be starters this year.
Right.
I don't need to keep reading this. I'm just giving you a little sense of it's not just a feeling. There are numbers that are telling us that what happened with the Patriots is not, it's not realistic to be repeated in 2026.
Right. And I think that all of that wrapped up, whether people know those actual facts or not, and it doesn't matter. I think that that ethos is out there and people will identify with that. And I think that's very valid to do. It's not, I don't think it's just, oh, well, the Bills fans are mad because they you know, took the crown and now they're the big bad Patriots again.
They borrowed it.
I really think that it's, listen, there's evidence to suggest that this team is not maybe all that you may be worried about them being.
Yeah.
And that doesn't need to be right. And they got better this offseason. Don't get me wrong. I think they got better. And so all that can be true, and they can still find a way to match what they did last year. I don't think that's impossible. But I think it's not as surefire a thing as I have maybe read or heard or listened to people discuss it as. And so I am in the, you know, I need to see it again out of them. I don't doubt them. I'm not sleeping on them. I know what they are. I know what they've done. And I know what they could do. I need them to prove it to me before I just sort of relinquish myself to it.
I view them as a tough out, but that's the extent of it. It's like, you're going to play some good teams. You're going to play two tough games in the division, and it's going to be the two against that team. But that's the end of it. Tough out is as glowing a prediction as I will give for New England is tough out, because I saw it last year and I still didn't see it last year.
Yeah, exactly.
At 14-3 and going to the Super Bowl. So I don't know. That's kind of where I land on that. All right. I'm trying to cross things off of my list here.
Doesn't it feel to you like the AFC as a conference has shifted away from what I felt was a big three with Baltimore, Buffalo, and Kansas City for like 4 to 5 years to now like it's a pretty, there's much more wide open feeling. I feel like, I don't know, it was 19 to 24. It was like, okay, Kansas City, Buffalo, or Baltimore is going to win the AFC. And I don't know that I can say
with
that
a little
this season.
A little dab of the Bengals.
Yeah, the Bengals could be in there. Or, you know, maybe once, every season there was maybe one more side character thrown in there. But I never felt that they were thought of or spoken about on the same level that the Bills and
Chiefs
and the Ravens were.
Right.
And now it really feels to me like now it is, nobody is as good as those teams were then. But nobody, it's the average level of the good teams in this conference now are better. Like, Jacksonville, to me, is good. And Denver is good. And New England even is good. There's a long – Baltimore could be good again. Kansas City, L.A. There's a longer list to me of teams that I feel truly, if I met them in the playoffs, I'd feel a threat.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's different than years past.
I think that's right. Yeah. And part of that is, you know, looking at these two articles – Denver and Jacksonville and New England did things last year that force you to think of them as contenders.
Right.
The Chiefs didn't last year. The Ravens didn't last year. But there is still residual stuff in our heads that puts them in the contender bucket.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they were both listed on the teams that are going to do better this year than last year based on Barnwell's analysis. So, yeah, that's what it is. We're talking about half the conference with a chance to
right. Whereas I think it used to be like, okay, beat Kansas City, and you're probably good. I don't feel that way anymore.
No.
That is not – I would maybe prefer to have one or two teams to really worry about and square off against than six who I think could really beat me.
Unless you just put your pedal to the floor in week one and you pull away and then you don't care about any of them, and then you're the team that everybody's trying to get. Because I think it's far more likely that the Bills are the team that everyone's – got their eye on, mm-hmm. then New England is the team that everyone's got their eye on, despite the fact that this guy wrote an article. And look, the article that I read, written by a Boston writer who's been covering the team since like 1997, was a great piece if it only went out to Patriots fans.
Mm-hmm.
But they put it on the cover, you know, the front page of ESPN.com as like the featured story. It wasn't meant for me to read it. It made me angry.
Right, upset.
But if it was just in like their fan digest, the Patriots version of Shout Magazine, and was just going out to the super fans and the booster club, it would have been just fine.
Well, of course.
Instead, it landed here in my inbox, on my screen, I should say, and it made me mad, and I've been dwelling on it for several days now.
Well, so that'll
coming
happen.
Up on a week now. I can't stop
sports.
Thinking about this stupid article.
Yeah.
All right, you know what else is sports? Carl Jones.
Yeah.
Carl Jones is sports on Channel 4, and he'll join us next as we continue. Filling in for Show Up in the Bulldog is Owen Parker, and I'm Brad Ryder, and we'll be right back with Carl Jones from Channel 4 on WGR. Brad Ryder and Owen Parker in for Show Up in the Bulldog this afternoon. I'll be back to my regular shift at 1 p.m. tomorrow with my regular radio partner, Tim Graham, who I haven't seen in so long. I miss Tim Graham.
I'm excited.
I missed him. I'm also excited to speak with Carl Jones, who I've said this. I said this when you weren't here, Carl, and I will say this with you here. I don't even know you. I've never met you. I just like you on TV, and you seem like somebody I would enjoy talking to. So I'm glad to have this opportunity. I'm glad Owen had your phone number to get in touch and reach out and get you on the show.
See, you don't got to butter me up like that.
No,
you
it's legit. I said it, man. I said it earlier. That said, Owen, you had a pretty specific reason you wanted Carl to come on today.
Well, yeah, I think the defensive secondary in the last few days, Carl, has become a bit of a talking point. We had Jim Leonard say that he was concerned with some of the injuries and whether they've had enough time to gel together. So let's start right there. How big of a factor do you think having guys in and out, missing time, not working as one solid unit with the starters, how big of a factor do you think that is for a team that's trying to install a new system and has a new defensive coordinator in Jim Leonard? Is that a major issue for you?
I don't want to say it's not nothing. Anytime that you're not out there with a fellow teammate, it definitely takes away something. But with how much time these guys spend in the meeting rooms, with all the additive stuff you can do in terms of walkthroughs and jogthroughs, you can make up some time lost as long as players are healthy enough to be on the field. It's not like C.J. Gardner-Johnson's on crutches or anything worse, or a boot where if they're doing walkthroughs at night, he can't talk through certain coverages and certain checks and balances, right? So I don't think that's the bigger issue. I asked the question. I was talking about just the youth in the cornerback room when I asked it to Jim Leonard yesterday. And he took it with the injury direction. I think the bigger concern is just that there's not a lot of trusted depth behind Christian Benford, more so than the injuries. I mean, yes, it's never ideal for players to be missing or out, but I don't think it's like a ring the alarm, like, oh my gosh, the players aren't healthy. They're not going to be able to talk to each other week one.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is sort of my instinct as well is like, these guys are together so often. It's the job. And if you know you're not getting the reps you would normally want in a, you know, standard practice setting, you would think that these guys are working behind the scenes to sort of make that time up. So, and one of the names you mentioned in there, Maxwell Hairston, another guy that I think has sort of become a topic of conversation. You've been around the team since camp started. What have you seen from him? I'm seeing a lot of conflicting reports. He's had a bad camp. He's been fine. He's ahead of IGB. He's behind IGB. Where are you at on Maxwell Hairston right now?
I don't think he's had a superb summer by any. Well, I'm not going to say summer. I don't think he's had a superb training camp in preseason. I wouldn't categorize it that bad. I don't think it's been awful either. I know I saw some people say that, you know, busts and things of that nature. I wouldn't go that far either. But I think heading into year two, you just maybe wanted to see some things pop and be more obvious. But listen, it's a new system. I get it. And the questions and concerns about how much of a fit this new system is for his game, I don't think those are going to be answered until the regular season, right? We were never going to get that answer until the regular season. So I wouldn't say it's been great. I wouldn't say it's been ugly either. I want to see how this plays out into the regular season. If I had to guess today, they'll roll with him out there in week one and then let the ball, not to steal a turn from Joe Brady, but put the ball down and see where it goes from there.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's good to hear, because I think it's a major concern. I think they drafted for the second year in a row a corner at that position really high. And, you know, for a team that has lacked high-end talent, burning back-to-back years of really high-end picks and maybe not getting the results we've wanted is a big concern for the fan base. So I'm glad to hear you say it hasn't been necessarily a nightmare like some have claimed about Hairston's summer. There was something
Where are we on Hairston's season last year? Because everything I heard was good, but there just wasn't a ton of production, but most of that was injury-related. So, I mean, collectively, what do we think about him as a player? I didn't think it was crazy for them to go after IGB early. I just view that as, especially with the way the playoff game ended and, you know, watching guys drop like flies, you can never have enough of these dudes. And they could play special teams for you. You can move them all around. But ultimately, Hairston, he has a grade of incomplete on season number one. So it's not like I would have drafted IGB to replace him. I just needed more, and it doesn't reflect on Hairston. But where are we on Hairston?
I think calling it an incomplete is a fair way to call it. There are some certain things that are certainly promising how he played last year. You saw the playmaking chops. You saw how that translated from college to the NFL. That was his number one calling. Well, his speed was his biggest calling card. But behind that, he's a master of taking the ball away. You saw that against the Chiefs last year, and I think the Dolphins was the other game. But then there's some other things where you need to, you know, have your antennas up and make sure you have your eyes on going forward. Injuries are one of them. And the other is, you know, giving up the big play. I think about that Jaylen Waddle touchdown. I think about the Bengals game. So you wanted to see him clean some of those things up. And then, unfortunately, this month he dealt with some injuries. I believe he just came back from I don't know if he was a groin, but someone just came back from a groin injury. And then he's given up some big plays this summer as well. So I think some of the concerns we had last year are still here, but I'm going to call it spade a spade. I mean, I'm going to be fair to everyone here. The games are where the things that count. So I just want to see what it looks like in Houston going forward.
Totally. There was another part of Joe Brady's press conference this morning that I found interesting and really sort of shined a light on your name and our lineup later. He discussed about nonverbal communication between defensive backs before snaps. And I was just really curious to pick your brain about how much are you working on as a defensive back acknowledging, listen, I'm not going to be able to hear you out here because our fans are crazy and the opposing team's on offense and we're trying to disrupt them. We're going to need to find a way to get our message across. What does that sort of look like? What are some strategies behind that? Anything you can tell us about sort of that aspect of the game from a secondary player?
Yeah, for sure. I remember at Syracuse, that was something similar when we were playing a big team, whether it's Clemson coming to town, NC State, fourth state, whatever the case may be, you understand that, listen, third down, it might feel like a road game to you too because they're booing the other team's quarterback. And our coach, one of our coaches used to say, if I play this film back, it needs to look like y'all throwing up gang signs. That's the type of nonverbal communication we're doing out there, just throwing up a bunch of hand signals, right? And mm-hmm. I think that's one thing. I always say a confident secondary is a secondary that's doing a lot of talking, a lot of hand motions, signals. And so when you're seeing a secondary do that, that's someone that is confident in what they have going forward. So that's a bunch of stuff. It can be walkthroughs where we're repping that stuff. It can be walking to the bus. I know sometimes we just be, you know, you're walking to the bus, getting ready for the game. You're like, all right, listen, man, if I get this look and I just throw up like elf ears, this is what's coming. So it's so much. But that's time on task, right? Christian Benford's been there and done that. He's played next to Cole Bishop. He's a good friend of C.J. Gardner-Johnson. When you just spend time with someone, with players off the field, some of the minute details you can pick up just like that. I don't need to be on the field to figure that out. We can figure it out whether it's in the hot tub, in the locker room, mm-hmm. you know, whether we're hanging out playing video games together. That's where that time on task helps out a ton, especially being close off the field as well.
Speaking with Carl Jones of Channel 4 Sports, I would say the same thing happens even here. And Carl, you're in the same basic business here. I can look at Owen and say, just now, Owen kind of just point his hand came up, and that meant, are you about to speak next? And I just gave a quick little nod, and we moved on. And you don't normally talk about it, and you don't normally think about it. But the more that you are around the same people, the more that you can communicate non-verbally, and it gets you out of a lot of trouble, not just in the football world, but in life.
Oh, for sure, 100%. There's so many times where I've been on TV, and I'm the rookie out there, right? You know, I'm with the OGs, Josh Reed, Tim Graham, Capaccio, all the fellas. And I'm sitting here, I'm like, hey, is it my turn yet? Is it my turn yet? So, I'm working on my winks and my head nods, y'all. I need to steal some of your tricks. I'm working on my winks and head nods.
I'm right with you, Carl. I'm in the process of learning the ropes myself, so I hear you. let's move away. We spent some good time on the secondary there. That's, you know, a big part of what you talk about and your expertise. But just moving up a little bit, I mentioned this earlier to Brad when we were talking about what we've seen in the preseason so far. And I try not to, you know, take too much out of these games that are pretty much utterly meaningless. But the one thing I could nitpick about if I was going to choose something was it did not look to me like the defensive line was getting much pressure on the quarterback. And I know that Leonard is likely to dial up a lot more exotic looks and to do a little more to help schematically up front. But is there anything you're concerned about on that line? It feels to me like the number one place I need that defense to improve. And through two games, I don't know that I've seen it.
I think that's a fair critique. My one pushback to that will be on third down, once the game starts, the four players at minimum that are going to be out there are Ed Oliver, Greg Rousseau, Bradley Chubb, and Deion Walker. Mm-hmm. We've probably seen them together for six snaps this year. So yeah. I think that's so. If we're talking about money down January 20th, this team is on the road at Arrowhead or in Denver or pick a random city. Those are the four that are going to be out there. It's not going to be Landon Jackson, T.J. Parker, T.J. Sanders, and insert other edge rushers. So that's the one pushback I would say. Having said that, though, that is something that I actually brought up as well, where I want to see some of the young pups, see what their pass rushing chops look like, what type of juice they have in terms of getting after the quarterback. Because when you talk about depth on the defensive line, players who get after the signal caller, think about what the Seahawks were. You think about what the Chiefs have been the last 2 years, the Philadelphia Eagles, the Houston Texans. I know they have two cyborgs, but they also have players off the bench. You would like to see if T.J. Parker has to sub in on a third down for an edge rusher, can he hold up his end of the bargain? What about a T.J. Sanders, a Landon Jackson? So I think there's some merit to it, but I'm not going to be overly concerned because at the end of the day, the aces, the big dogs who haven't played a lot this preseason are going to be the reason why, one way or another, the Bills advance as far as they want to go.
We had a thing come up earlier, and I mentioned this, and let me see what you think about it. Bradley Chubb, every time his name is mentioned, I go, oh yeah, because it wasn't the flashiest signing, despite the fact that this is a fifth overall draft pick who has been a star in the league, who had 8.5 sacks last year and had 11 a couple years, or, you know, 3 years ago, whatever it was. How do you view him? What level of expectation do you have for what he means as a part of this defense?
I think the first thing is his infectious personality, right? If you talk to anyone in the building, that's the first thing they say. He's a leader. The guys gravitate around him. You can just feel his energy out there on the field, whether it's the handshakes and how he commands the edge room huddles, things of that nature. So he's clearly been an additive in that regard.
That's the thing that happens to Tim Graham all the time, and suddenly he's on WBEN. It's just, I don't understand what it is, I recognize that sound, and that has happened twice.
I hope we didn't bail Carl out into some news talk radio over there.
Yeah, that's
too bad.
I don't totally understand it, but the phone switch places or something, but we've got Carl back, so it's fine.
No, but in terms of Bradley Chubb, the leadership is one thing. And then also, I will say that I don't have the expectations that he's going to be a 10, 12 sack guy. I just don't, that's not my expectations for him. If it happens, so be it. But I think that he's someone who's going to be solid and reliable and not, I'm like, oh man, what is he doing out there on third down? I don't think that's going to be the case whatsoever. He does look solid so far through St. John Fisher and now today back in OP. I'm not going to sit up here and say, though, I'm expecting Will Anderson or anything like that either.
Fair enough. All right. Carl, thank you so much for your time. Nice to meet you, kind of. And hope to talk to you soon.
First of all, good to talk to you guys, too. Have a good one.
All right. Thank you very much. It's Carl Jones, Carl, from Channel 4 Sports. You were right. Carl's cool. I was right, too. I thought he was cool.
Yeah, he's great. I think talking to him about defensive backs is how I try to sound when people ask me about goalies.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have somebody like that.
A little background, a little expertise mixed in.
Yeah.
Makes all of us look better. I like
that.
Absolutely. All right. Quick timeout. We'll be right back. Owen Parker and Brad Ryder in for Shope and the Bulldog on WGR.